Oh, she's there. Wachel, you there?
Wachel.
Wachel.
Hi.
Oh, terrific. Good. You're there.
Yadida, I'm going to hang up. I got some business things I got to take care of. So I'll just listen to the recording.
Okay, let me just check it's working then. Okay, no worries.
All right, I'm sorry.
Not to worry, sweetie.
All right.
Okay, bye then.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, bye. Now, let me just make sure that the recording is actually recording. Yeah, it is. Okay. That's good. I once recorded a whole thing and it never recorded. It was so depressing. I learned after that, you know, like it's like cooking with the, you know, with the oven switched off. You know, you suddenly realize, oh dear. All right then, let's find our prayer. Yes, it is. It's there. How come I can't find it? There it is. Good. Okay. Ribon ha'olamim v'adonai hadonim av ha'chaman v'slichot. מודים אנחנו לפניך, אדוני אלוהינו ולאבותינו, בקידה ובשתחוויה, שקרבתנו לתורתך ולעבודתך עבודת הקודש. ונתת לנו חלק בסודות תורתך הקדושה, מאנו ומחיינו, אשר עשית עמנו חסד גדול כזה. על כן אנחנו מפעילים תחנוננו לפניך, שתמחול ותסלח לכל חטאותינו ועוונותינו, ואלו עוונותינו מבדילים בינינו לביניך. וכן יהיו עצון מלפניך, אדוני אלוהינו ולאבותינו, שתכונן את לבבינו ליראתך ולאבותך, ותקשיב אוזניך לדברינו אלה, ותפתח לבבינו הערל בסודות תורתך, ויהיה לימודנו זה נחת רוח לפני כסא כבודך קרח ניחוח, ותאציל עלינו אור מקור נשמתנו בכל בחינתנו, ושינוצצו ניצוצות עבודיך הקדושים, אשר לידם גילית דבריך אלה בעולם, וזכותם, וזכות אבותם, וזכות תורתם ותמימותם וקדושתם, יעמוד לנו לבל ניכשל בדברים אלו. בזכותם תאיר עינינו במה שאנו לומדים, כמאמר נעים זמירות ישראל, גל עיני ואפיתה נפלאות מתורתך. כי אדוני ייתן חוכמה מפי דעת ותבונה, יהיו לו רצון עמי פי, והגיון לבי לפניך, אדוני צורי בגואלי.
אמן.
אמן. Okay. So the last piece that we were just to go out to look at is kind of like the end of paragraph 20. He says something, he brings something from the Tosafot of the Gemara Ketuvot, and he says, that it begins like this, oh, you want me to tell you where we are, don't you? It's the place where we were about to... I think we stopped just before the last paragraph in 20, and it begins Ubeze Tavin Mash Katuv Batosafot. Okay, and here you can understand what is written in the Gemara Tosafot in Ketubot. The Ach Adam Yitpalel Shezikanes Torah Letoch Gufo Yitpalel Shelo Yikansu Ma'adanim Letoch Gufo Ayin Sham. The Gemara says that before a person should pray that he should bring Torah into his body, into his self, his ego, whatever you want to call it, he should pray that he should not bring, like delicacies into his body. And I think that is such a powerful statement, and I think about it quite a bit. Because, you know, in the world that we've got now, where materialism is just so huge, it's just like, we want this, we want that, and there's just no end to it. And I'm looking at this whole business of my son getting married, and the bride's family wants... you know, a wedding on the standards that is the standards of today, which is a buffet before and a whole meal afterwards. And when you compare that to, and apparently they have this whole thing before you know, of choosing the menu, where the family goes and they sit there and they taste the different foods and then they choose the menu. I'm not going to that. I just told the other side, if that's, you know, you choose and I'll just agree. You know, I'm not interested in this. And when I remember about weddings I was at when I was young, and in my own wedding, we had tea and cake. We didn't have anything before. We had the chuppah, and then we had sandwiches and strawberries and cream, if I remember rightly. It was very nice. you know, and we didn't have a whole band. We had one man playing the accordion. And we had our close friends and the people who cared about us, and that was it. And it was lovely. And we were both very happy, and it was fine. I went to weddings on kibbutz where, I mean, I don't remember what we ate or anything, but there was just dancing in the courtyard of the Beit Knesset or the Chadar Ochel or something, and there was a chuppah outside, and the bride and bridegroom drove off on a tractor, and we had a nice meal. But it was only a regular kibbutz meal. It wasn't anything special kind of thing. And you can see how the world has become like so overwhelmed with gashmius.
Gashmius is material things.
Yeah, it's like getting involved with the material, really, isn't it? It's like, I want this, I don't want that. I was in the shop the other day because I need to buy some sort of roller blind for one of the rooms here. And I was just watching the man serve a woman with some sort of cover for sheets or something, you know, for the blankets. And do you like this color? Do you like that color? Do you want this? Do you want that? And he didn't seem to mind, you know. She was busy choosing what color she wanted. And it wasn't anything wrong at all. She wants the colour that she feels suits her and what she feels will be good with her. And there's nothing wrong with that. On the other hand, if we occupy our minds and our senses with all of these different things, there's really no space for Torah. It just gets taken up with the endless involvement with materialism. And I think, and that's besides, you know, the distraction of the news and the internet. Because then it's not just like getting involved with our own lives, it's then getting involved with the desires and wants of everybody else's lives as well. And it's just overwhelming. And I can really see now what the Gemara, you know, with all those thousands of years ago, how it kind of like said something which I think is so applicable to us nowadays, of simply making a space. If you're occupied with putting, you know, sensual pleasures into yourself, then there simply isn't a place for Torah.
Well, it's a balance, right? That there's, you know, we need to live in the world, and the world is a physical, material world also. And you could still involve yourself in material world as long as I feel like you have the kavanah of the spiritual world in everything that you do.
I think ultimately you're right. I think ultimately that has to be the, you know, the goal, isn't it? I mean, the Lubavitch to Rebbe. I mean, he says, you know, he places a lot of emphasis there onto raising up the sparks in the material. He doesn't at all advocate shutting oneself away from the world. On the contrary, he very much encouraged his Talmidim, his disciples, the Hasidim of Lubavitch, to go out into the world and be in business and be as part of the world, be involved with the Gashmius of the world, because that way you can raise it up.
But there is something about what you're saying and the how people approach the material things like their spiritual things, like I have to have it this way, or it's like it becomes like a urgency of the soul, like if it doesn't get their material needs met, then something is going to be destroyed in the process, which is totally not true, but it feels true. You're making those decisions.
Yes, I absolutely understand you. It does feel true. And I've been through those sort of situations myself where I said, I absolutely have to have this. And then after I got it, I thought, well, what was the matter with me? I didn't actually have to have it. I was fine, you know. And what would have happened if I hadn't got it? And it's like coming to that awakening that it's okay. It's, I think, quite a difficult place to come to. So, I must say, like, I think also that to understand that the physical world is habit forming, it can be an addiction. You know what I mean? Like when you say, I have to have something, it's kind of like the way an addict might respond.
Right.
Yeah. And of course, he's better off without it, whatever he's addicted to, but he can't tear himself away from the addiction. So there's lots of reasons why I think it's wise to limit the contact. I wouldn't say necessarily the contact, but the involvement in some sense with the physical, with the material, so that we have what we need, and no, we don't go into what luxuries. And like you said, all the time, it's a balance, and it's also a balance which every generation seems to have to rediscover for itself. Because what was sufficient for my generation is, you know, doesn't seem at all to be sufficient now, or like regards weddings, or for example, I remember where before these big shopping centres and like places like New Farm or Super Farm or something had even come to Israel, and then. If you wanted a toothbrush, you went to your local chemist and he had maybe one or two models and that was it. And you chose which one you preferred, red or green. I mean, that was it. Or you know, certainly there wasn't Super Farms and New Farms and all these things. And there wasn't all this choice. You didn't need it. You just, if you wanted to buy your goods, you went to the Makolet, and if you wanted to buy some vegetables, sometimes they had them at the Makolet, and sometimes you had to go to the vegetable shop, and that was it. There wasn't these huge places with endless choice, and I think that it sort of like got so much that if you really wanted to, you could spend all your day doing those sort of things, and then there's no time for Torah. Not only time, but I think it's mental space and heart space and soul space. So you've really got to carve out these places for Torah. in your life?
It feels to me like the material world is very fragmented, like there's lots of fractals in it, and the Torah world is very whole, and those two aren't in, like when you said the mental space, like those two aren't in alignment in the mental space. Like if you're in the fragmented world, you're not in the whole world, and if you're in the whole world, you're not in the fragmented world.
Yeah.
Like there's some kind of a disconnect there.
To me, it feels like that. I think it's really like, you know, which one do we identify with? So I can do my shopping that I need to do for Shabbos and things like that, but my identification is with Shabbos and not with a particular type of, you know, cabbage salad or something.
Right.
So I think that's, you know, another place where we can look at how the balance can be. Like, can I maintain my Torah focus whilst I'm in the material world? It's very interesting that Rabbi Ashlag sent all his students out to work. He didn't at all agree with people sitting in yeshiva and hiding themselves from the world. Not at all. He said everybody had to earn their living. And he did not agree for students to sit in yeshiva all day and not earn their living. And as far as I know, all the students of Rabbi Ashlag to this day go out and earn their livings. And they manage. Some of the students who actually work for the Beit HaMidrash get a salary from the Beit HaMidrash for the work they're doing. Obviously, they have to eat. But that's it. Everybody else goes out to work, has a job. And then they come, get up, they studied at from... well, they used to study in the time of Rabbi Ashlag from 2 o'clock in the morning till dawn. Now they study from 4 in the morning till dawn. And then they go to work. As far as I know, there's also another shiur in the early evening. There's a lot. And families and work and study. It's not nothing. It's huge. But again, I think it's like carving that space out, you know, making that space for Torah. And I think in some ways, this is what this piece of Gemara is saying to me. Like before a person should pray, before he brings Torah into his, you know, into his self, let him pray that he doesn't bring in sensual delicacies into his body. In other words, like he's not yearning for them. He's grateful for what he gets. He deals with what he has to deal with, but he's not yearning for it. And it goes on to say, Mishum de tzurat kabbalah tzmit shi hafchit me'akdusha mitrabe u'mitgadelet b'shiur ha'tanuk ha'musag l'gufo kanal. And the reason is because of the form of the receiving for oneself, which is the opposite of kedusha, just magnifies and grows according to the measure of joy which comes into the body. And if that's the case, how is he possibly going to gain the light of Torah into himself, into his body, into his self, when he's completely separated in opposition of form from holiness? And there is hatred between them. They're like really in opposition of form. Just like all opposites which hate each other. And they cannot be together in one roof. And it's simple. That a person needs, first of all, to pray, that on the one hand, he shouldn't get too involved with the sensual delights into his body. But according to that, most of his work should be in Torah and mitzvot. He merits gradually to transform his form of receiving only for the sake of giving. And in this way, he makes his form equivalent to the framework of holiness. And the love returns to together between them, as it was prior to the sin of the tree of knowledge. And he immersed the light of Torah, because now he's come in into the presence of the Holy Blessed One. So I think what the answer here is to our dilemma, like, we obviously, you're right, we obviously have to deal with the material world, because that's the world we've been put into. This is our generation. This is the circumstances we're in. I mean, like you said one time that you had to go urgently to America, I don't know, with your parents or something, or your husband's parents, I don't remember exactly what it was. Well, obviously you've got to deal with the tickets and how you're going to get there and what you're going to eat on the plane. It's going to be kosher, not kosher. You've got to deal with all these things, otherwise they don't happen. So definitely we have to deal with them. I think the point he's making is, what do I identify with the place of pleasure as a place of pleasure? And basically he's saying, make your pleasure primarily through Torah and mitzvot. Now, of course, Shabbos and Yom Tov is a place of pleasure, but that's through the mitzvah. Because Shabbos and Yom Tov, we eat and we enjoy ourselves, and we should do, but it's because we're meant to. So we're actually, in that sense, like Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, who's told to work the Garden of Eden, and that means to actually eat from the fruit of the tree, from all the trees of the garden, and enjoy it. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that was actually his mitzvah. And so on Shabbos and Yom Tov, then of course we're in connection with God, and by eating and drinking and resting, we are actually embodying a mitzvah. So there's no separation. It's only when there's a potential conflict between them and they're occupying, you know, what is our interest and our space, then we need to put our identity and identification with Torah. Have you ever read Misilat Yesharim?
I don't think so. What is it?
Misilat Yesharim is the Way of the Righteous, I think it's called, by Rabbi Luzzatto.
No.
I didn't read it. I mean, I read it once when I was much younger, and I really didn't get on with it. And I tried to read a few sort of like condensed versions, or, you know, English versions. It's a way of advice, of ethical advice, of how to progress in one's service of God. It was written by Rabbi Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, who was a very great Kabbalist. He lived, I think it was in the 17th century, something like that, or maybe 18th century, I don't know. He was before the Baal Shem Tov, and he came from Italy. And he was an amazing Kabbalist. But the works he's actually best known for are actually two ethical works. One is Misilat Yesharim, The Way of the Righteous. And the other one is called Derech Hashem, The Way of God. Or Misilat Yesharim could be The Path of the Righteous. Depends how you translate it. And The Path of the Righteous, I'm just learning it again now with a friend. I really see what a great book this is, because it's like really giving advice, practical advice on how to put these principles into practice in a balanced way.
That's beautiful.
It is. It really is.
In Hebrew or in English?
You can get editions which have got both the Hebrew and the English. So you've got the Hebrew on the right-hand side and the English on the left-hand side.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes, 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 definitely. I think it's published by Feldheim, if I'm not mistaken. And what's interesting is that, like Rabbi Ashlag, he was also a Kabbalist. So he's bringing his understandings of how to be in relationship with God and in relationship to the world very much from its spiritual roots. I find it quite a difficult book to read because the language sometimes seems to be a little harsh. But often we find that books which were written earlier uses language, you know, just a style of language which isn't like what we're used to hearing in our modern times. But when you get to listen, actually really looking at what he's really saying, it's quite a remarkable work. And he also basically, I've just read the piece, that's why it reminded me, because I just read the piece this week. We're looking at how do we deal with the physical world. And again, he says, you want to be happy with what you're given and not go searching out, you know, or should this be better and that be better and that be better. But what comes to, what God appoints for you is just be happy with it. And then that frees you up and allows you more space for your real self, which is Torah. So there is an idea of that already there. So he says, and according to, if most of our work is in Torah and mitzvot, we find that very gradually we merit to transform the form of receiving into the form of giving, and we find that now we are actually in equivalent of form with the framework of holiness. And there's now returned to be equivalence of form and love between the vessels of receiving and the vessels of giving, just as it was prior to the sin of the tree of knowledge. And then a person merits the light of the Torah because he's come into the presence of the Holy Blessed One. Isn't that amazing? And that certainly will be at the Gemara Tikkun.
Can you repeat that line again?
Sure. Because it's really an important line. You're right. Let's start from Ulefi rov ha-ma'aseh b'torah u'mitzvot nimtza le'at le'at zoche l'hafech tzurat ha-kabbalah la'al manat l'ashpia v'nimtza mashve tzurato l'ma'arechet ha-kdusha v'chazra li'ot ha-ishtavut v'ahava b'ineihem כמו שהיה קודם חטאו של עץ הדעת, וזוכה לאור תורה, לאותו נכנס למחיצתו של הקדוש ברוך הוא. And according to that, most of the work is in Torah and mitzvot. We find that very gradually, he merits to transform the form of receiving into the form of giving. And we find that he equalizes his form, becomes into affinity of form with the framework of holiness. And again becomes affinity of form and love between them, just as it was prior to the sin of the tree of knowledge. And he merits to the light of the Torah, since he has come into the presence of the Holy Blessed One. Okay. Shall we move on?
Sure.
All right, then. 21, כף אלף. ואתה מובן היטב. למה לא מובא תשובתם של המלאכי מעלה בדברי בריאת האדם? שאמרנו במדרש כנל, באות י' עיין שם. So he says, and now we can well understand why the answer of the ministering angels concerning the creation of the world was not brought in the Torah, as we discussed earlier. שאל אדם של עתה, לא הסכימו אפילו מלאכי חסד וצדקה, כי יצא כולו מתחת השפעתם, ונעשה סמוך על שולחן של הסיטרא אחרא כנ"ל. And the answer is because concerning the man as he is now, that is after eating the tree of knowledge, eating for the fruit of the tree of knowledge, concerning such a person, even the angels of Chesed and Tzedakah would have agreed. They never agreed that either, because he's completely left their influence and become supported by the tree, sorry, by the table of the Sitra Achra. V'hainu shemesayim ha-midrash shenatal ha-emet v'ishlichu la-aretz. And this is how the midrash concludes, that he took truth and he cast it to the ground. Miyad amru kulam, all of them straight away said, ta'aleh ha-emet min ha-aretz. Bring up truth from the ground. Klomar, sha'afilu malachei chesed u'tzdaka hitchautu al haskamatam. That even the angels of loving kindness and righteousness regretted their agreement. Ki ada'ata dahachi lo iskimu me'olam. For as things are now, they would never have agreed. That truth should be so denigrated. And this is the happening that happened at the time of the eating of the tree of knowledge. When truth was lacking from the way reality was conducted. And that's true, because the snake told a lie to Chava. And now, why would she even suspect that? I mean, you know, if somebody's telling us something nowadays, we like to believe everybody, but we're aware that some people might be telling us falsehoods, and in any case, we'd want to check things for ourselves. All right, maybe the guy made a mistake. But Chava and Adam and Chava have only lived in the Garden of Eden, where everything went according to God's law, God's rule. Why would she even have suspected that the snake could tell a lie? And I think even deeper, how could the snake have told a lie if it wouldn't been that God allowed him to?
Right, and then how could have God punished her, knowing that she came from a place of such innocence and purity?
It wasn't because they ate the first time. They ate the first time in total holiness. It was because they had eaten the second time. And a punishment in the Kabbalah is not a punishment. That's what we have to understand. There's no such thing as a punishment. God is only good. So what to our senses seems to be a punishment is just a way of tikkun. And if we look about what was the punishment involved, it involved bearing children, relationships with your husband, and the man having to work. Now, if we look at those three things, I would say that those three areas are the three main areas we all do our tikkun in. We work to do our tikkun in those three areas. Like, they all try our faith. They all try our patience. These are the places where we really have to give up our wills to receive for ourselves alone and move into the will to give. And these are really hard places. Everybody struggles with them. The relationship between man and wife is one of the hardest places for most people. Okay, it's really nice when you get a really, really, really loving husband and wife, and they're just in love, and that's who they are, and you know, they bring up their children, you know, and it's all a dream. But when you go into it, for most people struggle, and we struggle in these places because these are the places of our tikkun. So God gave us three places of tikkun. Like, the man has to work now because the earth is not going to give all its fruit out just like it did in the time of the Garden of Eden. The woman and the man have the relationship to work on. It says, the woman yearns for her husband and the husband has to play his part. And then, then you've got the whole issue of having children, bearing them, and bringing them up. Which, again, it's not just the woman, it's both of them. But these are not punishments. These are God saying, now you can do your tikkun in another way. All right? Instead of you eating the apple in one go, and doing the huge tikkun in one fell swoop of everybody in the entire world. Now, I'm going to give you a way to do the tikkun slowly, slowly, within your lives. And it'll be, you know, person after person, generation after generation, life after life. So a punishment is not a punishment. A punishment is another way to come to tikkun. I mean, what did God care? From God's perspective, he is good and does good. And from his perspective, he could have said, oh, well, you ate from the tree of knowledge. Oh, dear, never mind, I'll make another tree or something. He could have done anything. He's kol yachol. But he didn't. He said it was meant to be this way because this way the tikkun is so much greater. And this way everybody gets a hand to do it, which we do. And the ways to do it are through relationships, business, whatever that involves, parnosa, and children. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
That's great.
It's like rather than just being and receiving and being in perfection, we're working towards the perfection. And it's like we're active partners in the perfection.
That's it exactly. And in fact, it's a much higher level,
right,
than Adam and Eve had in many ways. And this is what Rav Ashag says, we go up in holiness and not down. So even though it looks like we're going down and it looks like they got thrown out of the Garden of Eden and it looks like a fall and all that kind of stuff, in fact was l'tzorech aliyah. It was actually a place to ascend from, because now the actions of goodness are just multiplying all the time.
So when the angels see us struggling, but we're still somehow making a tikkun, even little by little, but they still say, that God shouldn't have given us because we're so far away from the truth. They still say that.
Oh, I don't know what the angels say now.
Should I talk about that? Like, I mean, we're trying, as humans, we're flawed, of course, but then humanity is constantly working. Like you said, it's making aliyot, and it's always working upwards. So it's true that the angels say that we're so far away from the truth, but we're making all these tikkunim. So isn't that worth having a world for?
I think so. I think that the Midrash is... is teaching us like the origins of the creation of man and how he was created originally. I think it was just looking at that particular point. I don't think it's a whole story. It's not the whole story. I mean, you have a different midrash, for example, when Moses goes up onto Mount Sinai and he receives the Torah. And the angels accuse and say, what is a human being doing up here? And God says to Moses, answer them. And Moses says, do you have anger? Do you have a Yetzer Hara? And the angels said, no. So he said, well, this is why we need the Torah. And because the human beings need the Torah in order to deal with their wills to receive themselves alone, which is what they need, because we need that, because we need the Torah, we can actually reach a higher level than the angels can reach. The angels don't have free choice. The angels don't have choice. They're either created on the side of holiness, like the angel of truth or the angel of Tzedakah, or they're on the side of evil. You know, Duma, and there's all these other nasty angels who belong to the side of the negative, or the Malach HaMavit or something. But they're just them. I mean, they're forces. They're like animals. In fact, they are the animal equivalent in the higher worlds. So, you know, the nature of an animal... is its nature. It's not good or bad. It just is. The nature of a tiger, even a tiger who, God forbid, becomes a man-eating tiger, and that does happen, it's not evil in the sense that it's choosing deliberately to do evil. It's just following its nature. Or like, for example, polar bears, in the frozen north, are apparently quite dangerous because they don't see man as man. They see him as a walking piece of, you know, meat. And especially if you're a polar bear and very hungry after having been, you know, hibernating for a few months under the ice, and out you come from your cave and you see this nice walking thing wandering around, they don't think twice. And in fact, they're quite dangerous creatures because they don't recognize a man as a human being. They recognize him just as something nice to eat. But you couldn't call him evil if he ate a man. He's just doing what polar bears do. So in a similar way, the angels are like the animals of our world. They are good or bad. They do according to their nature, the way they were created, but they don't have free choice. Only a human being has free choice, and by overcoming and transforming our wills to receive for ourselves alone, we actually reach a higher level than the angels, because we did it, like you said earlier, through cooperation, through choice, through partnership, rather than it being forced on us. And it is a higher level. So we looked at this idea that when Adam ate from the tree of knowledge, truth was absent from the conduct of the world. כי נכשל ונחלש כוח הביור המוטבע באדם מצד היצירה, שאופני פעולתו היה על ידי הרגש מר ומתוק. And what happened was that the power of clarification, which was originally put into man from the side of his creation, which was through feeling whether something is bitter or sweet, like an animal, if it's bitter, then keep it away, and if it's sweet, then draw it close. That was weakened. Not weakened, I'm sorry. It was nichshal, it failed. It failed because Eve went according to her understanding that of bitter and sweet, and therefore she felt she knew what was good and right for her to do and what was wrong for her to do. And she knew from her own experience that going close to the tree of knowledge gave her experience of tremendous bitterness. And then when she listened, so therefore she thought that was the reason why God commanded not to eat it. So she put her own experience first. And then after understanding the words of the snake as meaning that you were created in order to correct this bitterness, because it couldn't be possible that God should create something so bitter in his world, and she dedicated herself for the sake of giving, suddenly she saw this tree as being the most delightful of all the trees in the garden and good to eat. So she then went again according to her experience, and she ate from the tree of knowledge, believing that to be good, and she was doing a good thing. But here, her processing of what is good is true and what is bitter is false went completely wrong. And in fact, of course, she shouldn't have done it. She should have asked God first. And so that's how that power of clarification had failed her, actually. Ki ha-shefa shel kiyum, shem rapach b'chinot shonot, kvar hayu brurim k'shemesh k'tzoraim, ומחוברים במערכת הקדושה, והך אוכל יתאם, לקרב להשתלם בכל הנאהב המתוק, ולדחות כל המר והרע לו, באופן שלא ייקשל אדם בהם כנעל עין שם היטב. So what had happened was, up until then, all the bounty of existence, which is the 288 sparks, different sparks of light, which at that time was sustaining the framework of the garden of the Garden of Eden, were clarified like the sun at noontime, and they were joined only with the Marechet of Kedusha, and the palate eats and will taste, like he tastes it and it's good, okay, and therefore a person, Adam, was able to draw close and to be perfected with all that was beloved and sweet, and to push away everything that was bitter and bad for him, such that man would not fail through this clarification. Omnam, however, acha ha-ti'ima ha-rishona shel eitz hadat, but once they'd had the first taste of the tree of knowledge, שמחמתה נתבקה בהם צורת גדלות קבלה עצמית, because of which the form of the greatness of receiving for oneself alone got clung to them. ונעשה גופם עם הקדושה שני הפכים, and their bodily structure became completely opposite with that of the holiness. אז הגיע שפע של קיום, then the bounty of existence moved over to the Sitra Achra. ונמצא שרפח הניצוצין שהיו כבר ברורים חזרו ונתבלבלו בידי Sitra Achra. And we find that these 288 sparks, which had already previously been clarified, now became confused in the hands of the Sitra Achra. And now we have a new form came into being, into reality. And now we have something that can happen, that it starts off sweet and it ends up bitter. Because this is the way the form of the 288 sparks have changed in the hands of the Sitra Achra. That the light of joy through them brings separation and a drop of bitterness. And this is the form of the lie. Avi avot hachubanot, the father of all destructions, v'kol bilbul, and all confusion. V'zesh katuv shenatal emet v'shlicho la'aretz, that he took the truth and he cast it to the ground. V'alken nitvasef la'adam mitoch etzio shel nachash biruach hadash, and therefore was added to the person through the advice of the snake, a new clarification, shukach ha'poel ha'sichli, which is the power of the intellectual intellect, shofanei pulato alidei biru emet v'sheker, we works through trying to clarify each time what is true and what is false, shemuchach l'shameishimo b'kol meshach zman ma'alach ha'tikunim, and this is what a person has to use throughout all the time of the tikkunim. Shibilado hu nimna mahatoelet, because without that, his life doesn't have purpose. He can't fulfill his purpose. Ubo v'haskel kamut habilbul shenidhafta b'sibat nefilat v'apach nitzotzin lidei Sitra Achra. And just look and see how much confusion has happened because of the 288 sparks falling into the hands of the Sitra Achra. Ki b'term sheta'amu me'etz hadat lo yochla ha'isha af lingol b'dva ha'asur. Because before they'd tasted from the tree of knowledge, the woman wasn't even able to touch something forbidden. Even if she was just close to touching the tree of knowledge, she could already taste in it the bitterness of the taste of death. And therefore she understood and added the prohibition of touching. V'achar ti'ima arishon shekvar shaltan hagata Sitra Achra v'asheka b'kiyum ha'metziyut. And after she had tasted the first tasting, then the governance of the Sitra Achra was ruling, and the falsehood in the conduct of reality. Naselem eisu kokach matok b'tchilato. And what is forbidden became so sweet at its beginning, ad shelo yochlu od lifrosh hemino, till they could no longer separate themselves from it. Kamo shekatuv, kamo sheamru zichrona lemivracha, as the sages said, she'ama achalti v'ochal od, I ate and I will eat more again. There is so much here.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true that what is forbidden is very sweet in its beginning. Otherwise, we wouldn't be attracted to it. Let's say somebody's annoyed you or really made you angry. To yell at them is very sweet in the beginning. Only afterwards you realize that wasn't the right thing to do, to get involved with anger, for example. Or anything that attracts us. Lashon hara. You know, We know we shouldn't do it. We know it's wrong. We know gossip isn't good. And yet the sweetness, it attracts us. Why would people be drawn to speaking Lashon Hara if they know it's not right? Because there's a sweetness there. It makes us feel good. It makes us feel important that we know something that somebody else doesn't know, that we're able to, feel stronger than the other guy. We're able to let off some of our steam about the other guy. We're able to, Also, because maybe some people find that interesting also, what the other person's doing. After all, we're very social creatures, and what everybody else is doing is interesting. Look at the news. The news is full of Lashon Hara. It's unbelievable. It's just one lot of Lashon Hara. I'm quite sure it's possible to do a Lashon Hara Naki news. You know, things we actually need to know because we need to know them. But we don't need all the other stuff.
It's interesting, like, with the sweetness that turns to bitter, it's almost like you have to be so highly conscious in order to see all the steps along the way, including the bitterness. Like, you, in the moment that you decide to do anything, you have to hold everything, the first moment of sweetness and the last moment of bitterness in each decision, right? And that's like highly conscious way of living.
That's brilliant, Elena.
See that and feel that and know that. It's like, whoa.
That's incredible, the way you define that. I mean, that's, you know, we looked at the, well, I just brought up the whole book of Ramchal. That's his first chapter. That's actually the first thing he wrote, is about, like, to have awareness what the outcome of your actions are going to be, and to try to understand in the beginning where the danger spots are, where the bitterness might be, so that you know to keep away from it, to know to take precautions from the beginning. Very often, of course, being human beings, we tend to, you know, do it first and then discover it all afterwards.
Right.
But then Cheshbon Nefesh is useful, because then if we actually look and see what happened, instead of looking at Cheshbon Nefesh as a means for sort of self-guilt, one could look at Cheshbon Nefesh as a means for looking at past experience and learning from it, so that we have more awareness for the future.
Right.
And I think that's, you know, that seems to me to be a healthier way of looking at Cheshbon Nefesh, a more purposeful way. It actually gives you an incentive to do it.
This is very material, but I just saw a great movie last night. It was the Alice Through the Looking Glass, the Alice in Wonderland.
Really?
It was really amazing. And she travels through time to change the past.
You're right.
And the message is that in this particular movie, in this portal of Alice in Wonderland, is it says you can't change the past, but you can learn from it. That's like the whole message of, like, one whole message of the movie.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, it's really beautiful. It's really beautiful. And it feels like that's what you're talking about with the Cheshbon Nefesh, that you can't change it, but you could rectify it into the future. And maybe by rectifying into the future, energetically things also change in the past too. Maybe not the event, but the impact of the event or something.
I agree with you.
But absolutely. Still, like, this idea of seeing the whole picture, it's like that feels to me very much like God consciousness, that that God has this view of everything at all times. And I guess my question, it's like to myself and to God and to whoever wants the answer, is like, how do you go from being a human and being tempted by the sweetness to being a human and seeing the whole picture and moving from that place? So that's
a
whole life's journey.
Yes, that's a whole life's journey. I think that it's, first of all, it's a life's journey. I think that the way that we taught is, that Rav Ashlag teaches us, is that on the one hand, to have faith in God, that everything he does and everything that's happening is exactly right. And that's, faith is called the right-hand side. And basically, we have to be happy and positive and have that faith that that is true. And then every day you take a little bit of time to like go inside and look at, you know, see where things are going wrong, where things aren't working out, where I am using my will to receive myself alone and getting stuck, and asking God to help us with it. So these balancing, like we talked about balancing. So it's actually mostly like the right-hand side, which is most of where we're meant to be, which is with positive feelings and positive self-esteem and positive confidence that God knows what he's doing and he doesn't make mistakes. And a little bit of cheshbon nefesh to see where I'm not okay and where I need to correct things, and with the help of God, and to pray and ask him to help us. And that way we move forwards. And I think that we move forwards not just by ourselves, but we move forwards with chevrutas, with chaverim, with other people who are also trying to move along the way, and we join together. And this is very helpful to have others who are doing it together. And of course, the wisdom, by taking time to, you know, look at the Torah, look at these ideas, study them, and see how do I connect with them, and how do I bring them into my life? Because without the wisdom, we wouldn't even have taken time off this morning to even think about these things.
Right.
So I think making time for Torah and making time for shiurim is really, really important.
Yeah.
Because it gives us a chance to even like just, you know, open the question.
Right.
Okay.
Great. Thank you.
You're very, very, very welcome. Super. Did you pay that last PayPal one? I can't remember.
No, I will. I'll pay it today or tomorrow.
I'll be very grateful.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay. I understand.
What are we? Are you open to doing another class after this one?
I am, but not necessarily. The trouble is, I'll be very frank with you, in Sfat, it's very difficult to get people to pay. It's very difficult to get people to stay with things till the end.
Mm-hmm.
People drop out. There's a lot of Torah around. A lot of it is for free.
Right.
So it's not like people feel this is my only Torah and therefore I have to do it and I want to do it. But they have that feeling of, well, it's nice, but if I have to drop out or I have to do something else or I have to whatever, it doesn't make that much difference because I'm going to get Torah anyhow.
Right.
And so, yes, I'm very willing to do it, but I think what I would like to do is to like try and find a base of people who'd be interested who are not necessarily in Sfat.
Uh-huh.
So that we could have, for example, people in Ra'anana, people in Perach Tikva, people where there is Efrat, people where there is other communities who've got English speakers and who would welcome this material, but who are living in communities where you know, where it's not Tzfat, where, you know, there's the idea of paying for a shiur is not so weird.
Right.
And it isn't weird anywhere else people pay.
Right.
It's just because there's so much free stuff in Tzfat, people can't think why they should.
Right. Well, and it's also the idea of affording something here, because it's...
There's a lot of poor people here.
Yeah.
It's true. So, I love Tzfat people, don't get me wrong, but I can't base a shiur on people who just are in Tzfat.
Right.
Because it just doesn't work. You know, I end up with people who suddenly just disappear in the middle or whatever.
Right.
And I don't want to stop a shiur. Once I've started, I feel a responsibility to Rabbi Ashlak.
Right.
To put this out and to do it. But I've enjoyed doing this very much, and I would like to teach this again. And I would like to tidy up the translations. The translations are okay as far as they go, but I haven't been over them and edited them properly to make a real production from them. I mean, I'd like to get them up to real good publishing quality. And then I've got, you know, something else up my sleeve maybe to publish one day.
Great.
This is like, you know, but it's only a beginning. The translation as I put out now was just, you know, basically what I did each week, and I haven't had time to go over it and work on it. The editing takes forever, Elina. I'm doing this book, the translation of the Sulam book. It's a biography of Rabbi Ashlag, and I'm working with the editor, and we are hardly managing a chapter a week. And since there's 23 chapters, I mean, it's going to take 23 weeks at the earliest to get through the editing.
Wow.
I know. That's nearly half a year.
Right.
We worked together 2 hours yesterday. It takes forever to do the editing of this material. Mm-hmm. Because on the one hand, it's a person who can't read Hebrew. It's his first or his only connection with the material. He's not going to be able to understand the material except through the English. So it's very important that it's accurate, but also it's important that it's readable.
Right, right.
And that he can make that connection and find the heart of it through the English. And getting it to that level is so hard. I translate it into English, and then I've really got to see, does that word really reflect what Rabbi Ashlag's trying to say? And is it readable? So it's an avodah. Mm-hmm. But I love doing it. I just need the money to do it with.
Right. Okay. Is there a Rabbi Ashlag, some kind of an institute or research group that has funding for your time to do that?
There's beginning to be. There's a fellow called Or HaSulam who wants to pay me to translate work to put on his website. So I have to discuss that with him. I said to him after my son's wedding. So that might be some way to do it, but a fund to support me in my work, to do things in the way I want to put them out. No, at the moment there isn't.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you're right. I mean, ultimately that would be fantastic.
Yeah.
I find, for example, the inspiration of teaching very important to me.
Right.
I don't find translating just for a website to be at all inspiring.
Right.
It's too disconnected for me. I need the feeling that there's somebody there, that somebody There's somebody who cares. The other
is the receiver. You're
I
giving to give.
Yeah, I can't do it in a vacuum. You know, when you ask your questions, for me, that's a wonderful thing, because for me, that's the place where I feel I'm connecting with you and you're relating to it, and or you're saying things. I mean, honestly, Alina, your understandings are so profound. I'd love to carry on learning with you.
Yeah, I would love to also.
Yeah, I mean, really, I would. I'll have to think about, see what's possible.
Yeah, and like what books of Rabbi Ashlag would be good to study, if any. I mean, I know we did a little bit of Tapestry of the Soul.
And I would other love to do Tapestry again. If there's, wait a minute, I think there might, somebody asked me about Tapestry recently. I can't remember now. I ought to write these down. Oh, no, that fell through. She didn't reply. If I get another group of Tapestry together, that would be fantastic.
An online group, yeah?
Yeah.
I know that Eliezer talked to you before about doing something.
He did, actually. And I, at the time, I was very involved with this, and I had too much other stuff going on, and I really couldn't handle it. But maybe that would be good. He wanted to do something not online. He wanted to meet physically.
Right.
He felt that was very important.
Yeah, that he's really into that.
Yeah.
I ask him. I'm actually going to talk to his wife after we get off, so I could ask him again and see.
Yeah, say that I am interested now.
Okay.
And I just need to sort of get past my son's wedding, which is less than 2 weeks now.
Mazel tov.
Thank you. Yeah, and we're finishing this. And, yeah, we could definitely start to think about getting the group together.
I mean, I don't know what other options there are. So maybe if you could think about what you like to teach and send me an email of different like options, and then whatever resonates, I could maybe get some people together, or we could put the word out.
Yeah, but again, like putting the word out, it has to be a real understanding of a commitment.
Right.
I mean, like, for example, Susan was really, you know, yes, don't worry, I'm committed. And, of course, you know, she got birthright.
Right.
And things just are like, she couldn't do it anymore.
Right.
So it's, of course, yeah, life changes. And I understand that. I'm not cross or anything like that. But it's that feeling of the commitment, I think, is important. Yeah, okay. He thought that maybe we could also include people from Rosh Pina.
Yeah, that sounds great.
I think it's a good idea. I think that's a good idea. We'll see what happens.
Okay, I'll talk to him.
Good. All right, lovely.
Great. So besides Tapestry of the Soul, is there anything else that you like to teach?
There's plenty I like to teach.
Uh-huh.
Would
you be open to sending me like a list?
Yes, I could do that. We could definitely do that. I think that Tapestry in some sense is the easiest, in the sense that it gives us all the basic ideas. But we found that we weren't too handicapped learning this introduction. We did manage it, even though we hadn't done Tapestry first. Yeah, we can. There's things we can do. Definitely. I'll think about what material we could do. Yes, and I'll send you a list. Good idea.
Okay, perfect.
Lovely. Very good.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
All right. Talk to you next week. We're still on, right?
Next week is the day before It's like Shavuot. I would suggest that we don't.
Okay, so we'll do the week after.
The week after, I can't, because it's before the Shavuot. It's the Shavuot's week, and I'm being too busy. But the week after that, yes.
Okay, so
not the next 2 weeks.
So that's, hold on.
I think it would be the 20-something of June.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, thanks.
All right, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. Okay, bye then.